Chuck Smeaton from the Royal Institution of Australia, and this is the Cosmos Briefing Podcast. I'd like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land wherever you are listening from today, and I would like to pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Scientists say that 2021 is our last chance to stop the effects of climate change from fundamentally disrupting the weather patterns we've relied on for millennia. After a year's delay due to COVID, the 26th United Nations Climate Change Conference, also known as COP26, is about to begin in Glasgow, providing a crucial opportunity for more than 100 world leaders to come together and chart our future on this planet. But what do the climate scientists themselves think of this pivotal moment? This week, Cosmos journalist Lauren Fuge speaks to five Australian climate scientists, one each day, to give you an insider's guide into what's at stake at COP26, what to look out for, and what their hopes and fears are. Today, we talk to Dr. Lyndon Ashcroft, a lecturer in climate science and science communication at the University of Melbourne. Originally from country Victoria, her career has spanned the academic, government, and non-profit sectors, working in climate science communication, citizen science, and historical weather data rescue.
Why is COP26 in Glasgow considered to be a pivotal moment for the world?
The latest IPCC report didn't pull any punches. We are running out of time. This is our last best chance to make meaningful climate action. The latest IPCC report has told us that the world has already warmed by over a degree. Every single continent is now being affected by the impacts of climate change. And no matter what we do, our future is going to be warmer. The decisions that are made at Glasgow will determine just how much warmer we are prepared to accept in our planet, you know, how many more heat waves and floods we are prepared to be prepared for. And so the decisions at Glasgow are really our last chance to dramatically and permanently reduce the amount of carbon emissions and greenhouse gas emissions in the atmosphere.
So we've been holding major climate talks for many years now without decisive movement on action or policy in Australia. Do you hope that Glasgow is going to signify a change for us here? What are your hopes for us at the summit?
I'm really hopeful for Australia's actions in Glasgow. We have seen over the last 18 months that Australians are prepared to do hard things to protect our community. And that's really what this summit is about. It's about making decisions to protect us, protect the people that we love, protect our children, protect the places that we love. And in Australia, we are more exposed than any other developed country to the impacts of a warmer world. The pandemic has shown us that we can make difficult decisions and we can change the way that we live to keep people safe. That has given me hope that we can do that again when it comes to climate change. And the momentum and the shift that I have seen in the conversations about climate change in the last 18 months give me even more hope. You know, people aren't talking about if, they're talking about when. People aren't talking about, you know, whether it will happen. They're talking about how much, how they can make personal changes in their behavior, how they can make changes in the way that they vote to ensure that climate action occurs. The momentum has swung, and if Australia can't step up to that and can't listen to what the people want, then I don't know. I think that's a real missed opportunity to be proud of us as a country.
That was awesome. I have hope now that you've said that.
Well, I don't know. The other people you've spoken to have been climate scientists for longer than me, except maybe Andrew, but he's amazing. I've been working in this field for 15 years or so, and I have just seen momentum grow and grow and grow. Yes, I speak with people who work in this space a lot, but conversations are more and more around what are you doing? What decisions are you making? How much less meat are you eating? When are you putting your solar panels in? People are making individual changes, but that's not enough. And we know that's not enough. Glasgow gives the government a chance to join the march that people are doing, that state governments are doing, to take this opportunity to make Australia a really big player in the future.
And obviously now Scott Morrison's attending. Wasn't sure for a while whether he was going to, but now he is.
Yes.
Do you think this could be an indication that a net zero decision might be on the horizon?
I really hope that Scott Morrison's decision to attend COP26 means that he's serious about designing a net zero emission future for Australia. We know that we can do it. We know that there are so many opportunities and benefits that can come from transitioning away from fossil fuels, not only an economic benefits, but health benefits, environmental benefits. There's so many positive things to come out of this. And I think the fact that Scott Morrison is attending, hopefully that's a good sign. Yes, there are still a lot of conversations to be had in Canberra, but I don't know, let's crack on. We don't have any time to waste.
Obviously, emissions reductions is going to be a big part of what is discussed at COP26, but what else are you hoping to see discussed there?
You know, that's an interesting question. Last night, I was up until midnight preparing a different video to go to COP26 with some international colleagues that I work with about data rescue. I work with historical weather observations. So I know that COP sessions are 2 weeks of discussions between politicians and scientists, and that merging of spheres really excites me. But to me, what I understand, having never attended one of these events, is that the conversations need to move from pledges and plans and future kind of targets to real nitty-gritty logistics about how are we going to make this happen. I think, to me, it seems as though a lot of the developed countries, at least, and most countries around the world, are kind of dovetailing towards an agreement and towards similar goals about reducing emissions, which is great. There also needs to be conversations had about how we're going to deal with the impacts that are already here. You know, how we're going to support the most vulnerable communities, how we're going to help developing countries, you know, minimize their emissions as best they can, and other ways in which the planet can prepare for the warm world that we have and stop making it even worse.
So in your opinion, what would be the best and the worst outcomes of COP26?
The best outcome, I think, would be a global plan, a real clear plan that can be supported by industry, that can be supported by local and national governments, some certainty. In Australia, we've had uncertainty around this issue for so long, and that has stopped real progress being made. So a good outcome, I think, would be some certainty and some clarity, particularly for Australia, you know, something that we can be proud of. The worst case scenario would be not that, would be countries disagreeing, would be people still fighting about minutiae or like small, just pussyfooting around. That would be the worst case scenario. I don't really think that's going to happen. What I've seen, I don't know, is giving me hope, but I think that would be pretty bad. Every single ton of carbon dioxide that we can keep out of the atmosphere counts. Every tenth of a degree that we stop warming makes a huge difference. And I'm really hoping that politicians can turn that science into action at COP26.
The last major kind of collaborative decision, I guess, was the Paris Agreement. So since then, how has the climate science itself changed or improved?
Since the Paris Agreement, we have a lot more information now about what a 1.5 degree world looks like compared to a 2 degree world. So if temperatures are 1.5 degrees warmer than the pre-industrial times, that means there's enough extra energy in the atmosphere, in the planet system, to heat the whole thing by a degree and a half. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it's actually heaps. And adding another half a degree onto that, we now have a lot more information about what the difference between those two thresholds can be. And that's they're pretty scary comparisons to make. We also have, I think, a much better understanding of the impact of extremes, and we're getting a lot better at attributing different extreme weather events to climate change now than we were. I think every single heat wave now that occurs on the planet, no matter where you are, coming into summer in Australia, we'll definitely be experiencing them this year. And climate change has its grubby fingers on every single one of those heat waves now. You know, I don't think we knew that in as much detail back in 2015. Of course, there's still so many things to understand about our atmosphere and our ocean. They're beautiful, incredible, complex systems. But the science, you know, this kind of skirting around the edges of climate science and getting more accurate information, more accurate projections, more detailed information at a regional level about what the future is going to look like, that's all really useful for us and it really helps us plan for the future. But the actual science behind climate change, hasn't changed at all. And it's been the same for about 100 years.
For the average Australian watching this, what should be their main takeaway about COP26? What do they need to know about it?
Well, this is our last best chance. COP26 is the planet's last best chance to minimise the impact of climate change. We have absolutely no time to waste, and immediate strong decisions need to be made to reduce the amount of greenhouse gases that are being emitted into the atmosphere. Get that number down to zero as quickly as possible, because every single extra ton of greenhouse gases that goes into the atmosphere will change our weather that little bit more, will make our children that little bit more vulnerable, will make our landscapes a little bit different to how they were when we were growing up. And so it might sound like a big political gab fest with lots of blue suits and ties, but it's actually a really, really important meeting, and the timing could not be more crucial.
Thank you so much, Lyndon. That was all the questions that I had, but did you have anything else you wanted to say or anything that I didn't ask that you think is important to know?
We know that carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are higher now than at any other point in human history. We know we've got a lot of things to be proud of in Australia, and it would be great if we could add climate action to that list of things to be proud of. And I also think that alongside this video of climate scientists, in some respects, the voice of the scientist is not the only voice that needs to be heard now. We know that climate change affects every single aspect of our lives, every single thing that we do now, from what we eat to where we holiday to how we build our homes to how we get to work to how big our families become. Climate change, you know, taints every single one of those things. And so what happens in the next month and the decisions that are made by those people right at the very top has a flow and effect to all of the things that we do in our lives. Maybe that's a bit much, but I don't know, it's true.
That's impactful. It's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. I really appreciate it.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode, one of a 5-part series that will talk to Australian climate scientists in the lead up to the 26th United Nations Climate Change Conference in Glasgow. Remember that you can head to cosmosmagazine.com via the link in the description for more great content. And you can also subscribe to Cosmos Magazine, Australia's only science print magazine, and Cosmos Weekly, with its unique approach to how science, current affairs, and the economy intersect. You can watch and listen to all our Cosmos briefings via the link that you'll also find in the description. And remember, if you support science and its communication, please support our work at the Royal Institution of Australia. I'm Chuck Smeaton. Today's interview was hosted by Lauren Fuge, and our executive producer is Catherine Roberts. Thank you.